guest today, Steve Snyder, recording for the historical record things that their fathers did. And in this case, Steve Snyder is telling a story about his father and the crew of the Susan Ruth, a flying fortress, a B-17 that was shot down during the Second World War over Nazi-occupied Belgium. The book is called Shot Down, the True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. You can get the book at Amazon.com. And what's frustrating about these kinds of segments is I've got what's left of this hour. And, of course, it's not a complete hour because every now and then we run a commercial or have news and weather and things like that. So I can't possibly do justice to this book in the time we have. As a consequence, while in this book, Steve talks about his father Howard's roots and how after Pearl Harbor was attacked and his father signed up for what was then the Army Air Corps, which later became the U.S. Air Force, the training, the first trip overseas to England, then this several of their combat missions, including the one in February 8th, 1944, where they're shot down by a couple of Focke-Wulfs who had singled out their flying fortress. What happened to those crew members who survived, which is a harrowing part of this account? We're going to do as much of it as we can, and Steve's on the line with us right now. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Without trying to gloss over some of the earlier parts of the book, I would like you to spend most of your time on that flight on that date in February and what happened after that. Before we get into it, though, you explain in the book that your father was kind of circumspect about his military experiences in the days after the Second World War as you were growing up. But he opened up when he was invited to a reunion to gather with other people who have had similar experiences. So tell us just a little bit about your father and how you decided to do the book.
Okay. Well, growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's war experiences. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England during the war. His plane was named the Susan Ruth, which was named after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas, that he flew bombing missions over Europe, but was shot down over Belgium, missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture, and he was finally liberated by the U.S. armies. But my dad, as you mentioned, my dad didn't really talk about it too much until 1989. Belgium organization, the Belgium American Foundation, founded by Dr. Paul Delahaye, who was a young boy during the war. They formed this organization to honor and remember the Allied soldiers that liberated their country from Nazi occupation. And in 1989, they erected a memorial to the crew of the Susan Ruth, and they invited the crew members over for the dedication. My dad and three other members of the crew were still living at the time, and they went over with their spouses. And that really brought everything back. He was reunited with a number of the Belgian people that helped hide him during the war, saw these houses where he was hidden, and that refreshed all those memories. Then he started talking about it after that. So I started learning more and more and more.
The B-17 was called a flying fortress.
Correct.
Because it had an advanced ability to defend itself with a degree of gunnery that smaller bombers, earlier versions of it, didn't have. Describe just what kind of ordnance they had on a B-17 flying fortress. And you had the B-17G, or your dad did, when he was shot down over Belgium, which was the most advanced version of it.
Right. There were two main versions of the B-17 that were utilized during the war in Europe, and that was the F model and the later G model. And the G model, which is the plane my dad was shot down, it had 13 50-caliber machine guns on it, so it was very heavily equipped, and with the firepower they could put out, that's where it got its name, was a flying fortress. Also, it could take a tremendous amount of battle damage and keep flying. The main difference between the G model and the F model was that the G model had a chin turret under the nose of the plane.
Although it was a silver aluminum frame, so that frame was not armored to withstand cannon fire from German fighters.
No, the aluminum skin on the B-17s was very thin. In fact, you could take a screwdriver and just poke a hole right through it. So the flak, or the anti-aircraft fire shells that were calibrated to explode at the same altitude that the planes were flying, the shells were filled with all sorts of shapes and sizes of metal fragments or shrapnel, and that could easily penetrate that thin aluminum skin of the plane.
All right, let's fast forward to the mission, and I should back up just a little bit. Yeah, your father did suffer an injury, not quite a wound, before that mission, which put him on the shelf for a while. This is while he was stationed in England, and he was playing basketball, and he turned his ankle, right?
Right. He was a pretty good basketball player. He was tall for back then. He was 6'3", and he was captain and most valuable player on his high school basketball team in Glendale, California. And he played AAU ball, which is kind of the
amateur athletic union.
Basketball. Yeah, amateur athletic union. And YMCA leagues were real big back in the 30s.
By the way, you mentioned that on his military ID, it listed his height as 6'2.5", and he was proud of that half inch. So when people would ask him what his height was, he'd always add the extra half inch, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was very proud of that that half inch. He was. He was proud of his height, but the commanding officer of his bomb squadron there found out that he was a good basketball player and enlisted him to play on the squadron team, which they won the championship. But he tore the ligaments in his ankle and he couldn't fly for about 2 months. As a result, a number of his other crew members actually had more missions than he had before he was shot down.
All right. So on February 8th, was it 1944? This was
right.
this was the mission that went down. Tell us about it.
Okay, it was February 8th, as you say. It was a mission to Frankfurt, Germany, and they dropped their bomb successfully during the bomb run, but they were hit by flak, and the flak damaged the bomb bay doors, and they couldn't get the bomb bay doors back up. And as a result, that caused a drag in the plane, and they lost airspeed. And they were unable to keep up with the formation heading back to Europe. And they fell behind, and they were singled out by two German fighters, Focke-Wulf 190s they were. And they swooped down on them like wolves on, sheep. And in the ensuing air battle, the Susan Ruth was shot down, although both those Focke-Wulf planes were shot down as well. One was piloted by Siegfried Merrick, and his plane went down and crashed, and he died in the plane. And the other was piloted by Hans Berger. He was able to bail out of the plane, and he made it through the war.
You describe in vivid detail when they took that cannon fire from the Focke-Wulf 190s that obliterated the front portion of the plane, the B-17, how one of the shells went right under your father's legs, and the cabin was consumed in smoke and fire. He couldn't get his seatbelt off because he had put his flak jacket over the seatbelt and didn't realize that at first. It's a very graphic account, and I couldn't do justice to it by summarizing, but when you get the book, you'll understand what it was like in the interior of that plane. Your dad, of course, is the commander of that plane. He wanted everybody to get off. It was clear that the plane couldn't survive. He told him to bail out. He finally bails out himself. We'll pick it up where we left off when we come back after these messages.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate. I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. American Financing offers the new government-backed down payment for first-time home buyers. Call American Financing at 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
You might recall just a couple of weeks ago, we did another book like this called The American Saint Nick, about an American soldier in Wiltz, Luxembourg, who in 1945, just as the Germans were about to launch the counteroffensive in the Battle of the Bulge, they brought back the Christmas tradition of Saint Nicholas to this Luxembourgian town that the Nazis had forbidden. And he was drafted to play Saint Nicholas. It was also a fascinating book. When I were talking to Steve Snyder, whose father, Howard, was the commander of a B-17 called the Susan Ruth, named after his young daughter, who was, of course, Steve's sister. And their B-17 was shot down over Nazi-occupied Belgium. Steve's been telling us about this, and when we put a bookmark in it, the plane was now about to go down in flames. Howard Snyder, Lieutenant Snyder, was telling everybody on board to bail out. Take it from there, Steve, and explain who survived, who didn't, and what happened to the various members of that crew, a lot of whom were separated from their fellow crewmates as the plane went down and they parachuted out.
Okay. Before I do that, you mentioned my dad's account of the plane actually being attacked. And that was from a handwritten diary that he wrote while he was hiding and missing in action. And it is a riveting account. You just can't make that stuff up. Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. It's an amazing account. I couldn't have written that myself any better. Also in the book are lots of excerpts from letters that my dad wrote to my mother that make it very personal. But the plane was shot down. Two of the crew members died in the plane, the radio operator and the ball turret gunner, from cannon fire from the Focke-Wulf planes. And my dad was the last one to bail out. The other eight crew members, there's a 10-man crew in a B-17, the eight bailed out. And they came down in different locations. Three of them are captured almost immediately by German patrols. Two of the men were so seriously hurt that eventually they were repatriated back to the United States. One of the waist gunners had his foot blown off, and the bombardier almost had his arm blown off, but they were able to save that. A German doctor did good work. And then the other man that was captured, he spent the remainder of the war in a prison camp until liberated by U.S. armies that were coming west after D-Day. And then my dad and the tail gunner, they were able to evade capture for 7 months. The tail gunner, William Schlenker, he stayed with one family the entire time, a mother and her two daughters, until liberated. My dad, on the other hand, he was hidden by various Belgium people. How long he stayed in any place depended on how brave those people were and how dangerous the underground thought it was for him to stay there. But he moved around from place to place. He might stay a night at one location, 6 weeks at another location. The typical scenario for down near men that evaded capture was that the underground tried to get him out and back to England through France, over the Pyrenees into Spain, and then out through British-controlled Gibraltar, but something always went wrong trying to get my dad out. So he finally got tired of hiding and decided to join the French resistance, a group called the Mackie. And then he started sabotaging convoys, German convoys, with this group until finally liberated. The three other members of the crew that bailed out, they evaded capture for a couple months, and they teamed up and joined up with five other crewmen from three other down B-17s, and they were hiding in the woods near Chimay, Belgium, when a collaborator ratted them out to the Germans, and they were captured, interrogated, and then shot.
Executed.
Executed.
Bill Slanker, who you talked about, who was also provided with safe harbor by some of these Belgians who took their lives in their own hands in doing so. He, from time to time, as Germans were doing house-to-house searches, would then leave the house and hide out in the woods until it was safe to come back.
Yes, at times. I can't imagine how terrified it must have been for both my dad and Schlenker, because they could have been caught at any moment, any day, any time of the hour. And there's numerous instances in the book that talk about close calls that they had of being captured. One can only imagine what they went through. I think maybe that's why my dad decided to join the resistance. It was better being the hunter rather than the hunted.
Well, reading some of those accounts, it reminded me of Anne Frank and her kind of experience, being hidden in the attic, never knowing when a knock on the door would be the Gestapo.
Right. And those Belgian people, they were just normal citizens, all farmers, basically, risking their lives to help these airmen who they'd never seen before and had a tough time communicating with, since my dad and Schlenker didn't know any French and they didn't know any English. They just had to kind of wing it. My dad could speak pretty good conversational French by the time he left, though.
We're going to take a bottom-of-the-hour break here. Tell us about the incident shortly after the plane went down, where the resistance fighters took one of the crew members to a hospital. His injuries were so severe they were afraid he was going to die. Took him to a hospital in town that was controlled by the Germans and snuck him in there. You go through the detail of that. We'll set that up as the next chapter when we come back after these messages.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days, 303-695-7000, or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Steve Snyder is our guest, who's written a book about his father's experiences during the Second World War. It's called Shot Down, the true story of pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17 Susan Roth Flying Fortress. How can people get the book, Steve?
It's available at Amazon.com. A couple more days left. I get two-day shipping before Christmas. Also at Barnes & Noble, and any independent bookstore can order it.
Wonderful. So if you're listening out there and you have any money left after buying my book, then you can buy Shot Down, Steve Snyder's book. So we're talking about that ill-fated flight. The plane was shot down. As you say, two of the crew members never got off the plane. When the plane crashed, people who saw the plane crash in Belgium actually saw one of the bodies being propelled out of the plane as the plane hit. And you've got some photographs of the two crew members who weren't able to parachute out of the plane. We were talking about your father's situation, where he was given safe harbor by some civilians who risked their lives in doing so. How about that? The one fellow who the resistance forces sneaked into a hospital. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, all the crew suffered injuries of some sort or another, shrapnel wounds, and Bill Schlenker, the tail gunner, was taken by the Mackey, the resistance group, into smuggled into a medical clinic at the main square in Chimay, Belgium. It was controlled by the Nazis, but a doctor there was, I guess, friendly to the underground, treated his wounds, and they snuck him back out. Actually, that doctor treated the wounds of a couple different of the guys that had parachuted out. And my dad actually parachuted out. He was the last one to bail out of the plane, since he was the commander of the plane, being the first pilot. He came down into some trees, and his parachute got hung up, and he couldn't get down. He was dangling 20 feet off the ground. But fortunately for him, a couple young Belgian farmers came out, saw his predicament, got a ladder, helped him down, and then told him to stay put until that evening when it got dark, they could come back and get him, again because of the German patrols in the area looking for these guys that had bailed out.
And this was February in Belgium, which is north of France and Luxembourg, it's cold in the winter up there.
Yeah. There's snow on the ground. So it was pretty frigid. My dad just stayed at that farmhouse one night. It was right at the French-Belgium border. And then they thought it was too dangerous for him to stay there any longer because it was too close to the plane where there were lots of Germans combing the area. So they moved him that night to another location.
When liberation came, tell us how Schlenker and your dad discovered that they were about to be free.
Well, Schlenker, he was hidden with the Colette family, Mrs. Colette and her two daughters, and they got word that the American troops were coming into town, so he waited until the American troops came into town and then went out and identified himself, but he was still pretty frightened that there might be a counterattack by the Germans. My dad was with the resistance. They had set a trap for a convoy waiting for him to show up, but they never showed up. But he heard that American troops were in a nearby village, Trelone, France. So he hightailed it over there and went up to an army officer and identified himself. And he had to prove his identity because he could have been a German just posing as an American. And then he was sent to Paris and then back to England and then back to the United States. At that time, if you were shot down over occupied territory, you could not fly again because the Air Force was worried if you were shot down a second time over occupied territory, you'd be tortured and give up the identity of the people that helped you.
Also, if you did 25 missions, anybody who remembers reading Catch-22, Heller's book, knows about the mathematics of fulfilling your mission obligation. But if you flew 25 combat missions, you could get rotated back to the States. And the Memphis Belle, remember that movie about the Memphis Belle, was supposed to have been the first aircraft whose crew had completed 25 missions. You had a little footnote in the book that actually that wasn't exactly true, was it?
No, in a couple aspects, the Memphis Belle plane flew 25 missions, but it didn't have the same crew on all of those 25 missions. And another B-17, the Hell's Angels, actually flew 25 missions 6 days before the Memphis Belle, but it didn't come back to the United States. So the Memphis Belle technically was the first plane to fly 25 missions and come back to the United States.
What about the fighter support for these squadrons of B-17s? And it was a pretty imposing squadron when they were airborne with all the gunnery that they had. There were P-38 Lightnings. You've got an illustration, a photograph here of a couple of P-38 Lightnings, and people who are familiar with World War II aircraft will remember that was one of those planes with that double fuselage. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. At the beginning of the war, 8th Bomber Command thought that these B-17s flying in tight formations of hundreds of planes with all that armament could defend themselves against the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe. But sadly, that was not the case. The Luftwaffe just decimated these formations in the early years in 1942 and 1943. And finally, Bomber Command realized that these formations needed fighter escort. Well, the problem at the beginning is that the P-38 Lightnings and P-47 Thunderbolts didn't have the fuel capacity to escort the bombers all the way to the target. They could make it into continental Europe a little ways, but then they had to turn back. The problem with that being that German fighters would just hover in the air and wait for those fighters to turn back to the go back to England, and then they'd swoop down. It really wasn't until the beginning of 1944 when they added auxiliary fuel tanks to the P-47s and with the introduction of the P-51 Mustangs that the formations had adequate fighter support.
Tell us about the Caterpillar Club. There's a certificate here that you feature in the book, and your dad was a member of the Caterpillar Club. What does that mean?
Yeah, any a crewman that bailed out during combat became a member of the Caterpillar Club, so named because the parachutes were made out of silk, which is produced by Caterpillar. So, yeah, my dad has a little certificate, and then on their uniforms they had a little, either a button or a little patch of a caterpillar. They also had another club called the Lucky Bastards Club, and if you made your number of missions, originally it was 25 that they set, and then it was increased to 30 and 35, but if you satisfied your mission limit, you became a member of the Lucky Bastards Club.
Yeah, you're a big fan of World War II movies, as I was as well, and you rattled off a whole bunch of names of them. Talking about Messerschmitts, you remember Johnny Carson when he would do that Karnak bit years ago?
Yeah.
With Ed McMahon, and he'd put on a turban, and Ed McMahon would reverse it by giving him the answer to the question, and Karnak would have to come up with the question itself. And one day, the answer that was given by Ed McMahon to Karnak was, he shot down 17 Messerschmitts. Johnny Carson, as Karnak, divines the answer, and he comes up with it. He says, why was Hans Gruber thrown out of the Luftwaffe? All right, we'll take a break. Steve Snyder is our guest. His book, Shot Down, the True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Military personnel streamline your VA refinance even if you're over 100% equity. No appraisal needed. Call 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
Steve Snyder, our guest, his book, Shot Down, the True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder, Steve's father, and the crew of the B-17 Flying Fortress of theirs, the Susan Ruth. And just to show you how magnanimous I am, while I'm promoting my book over the last couple of months and recognizing that there's only limited economic demand out there, you know, when I'm helping Steve sell his, there's less money out there for people to buy my book, but I figure there's enough to go around so we can both sell a couple of copies of it. Your mom died shortly after your father did. How long ago was that?
My dad passed away in April of 2007, and my mother pretty much just gave up after that. She died 5 months later in September. She just stopped eating. They had been married for 65 years, and she didn't feel like it was worthwhile continuing without my dad. So I lost both of them in a very short time span.
Did your dad, while he was still alive, have any idea that you would someday be writing a book like this?
Oh, heavens, no. I never did either. I retired in 2009, and that's when I had the time to really delve into my dad's war experiences in further detail to try to learn a little bit more. But it was never my intention to write a book. It wasn't until 2012 that I actually decided to write a book. Based on all that I had learned, I just thought the story about him and his crew and those Belgian people that risked their lives to help him was just so unique and so compelling that I had to write about it and wanted people to read about it.
Now, you talk about how your dad was invited back to Belgium to visit some of the places where he had stayed and how that caused him to open up to you about his experiences. You also, when your dad wasn't able to travel any longer as he got older, you went back and represented him in those same places.
Right. I've been back three times. The first time, my wife and I actually went with my parents in 1994, and that's when I saw all those places myself, and it became personal. But then we went back in 2004, then again this last year in 2014 for the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and of my dad's plane being shot down.
You also talked about the diversion that your dad was part of when we were trying to convince the Germans that we would invade at the most likely place, which was Pas-de-Calais. General Patton, who was on the bad boy list at the time, was assigned that task of making the false assault, the pretend assault of Pas-de-Calais, more believable to the Germans, and they bought it. What was your dad's role in that?
Well, he really didn't have much of a part in that per se. That was mostly just ground forces that they pretended to build up to cross the channel at its narrowest point there at Pas-de-Calais.
And they had inflatable mock-ups of tanks and things that from the air made the Germans believe that they really had all this hardware there. Talking about General Patton, you do talk about in the book how after the landing at Normandy, when the Patton's Third Army was let loose in occupied France and made its move all the way to Belgium and environs, how they covered 40 miles a day in that that rush, and that the Germans ultimately broke in disarray. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, he was quite a guy. In fact, he was. His father was the first mayor of San Marino, the town I grew up in. But he was a no-nonsense guy, and he just believed in just going straight ahead. You don't stop for anything and keep the Germans on the run. And boy, did he ever do it. So they came up, and then they defeated the Germans at the Falaise Gap and then broke through and then up and up through France and then into Belgium. And as you mentioned, my dad was actually liberated by Patton's Third Army. Schlenker was actually liberated by the First Army.
They and, of course,
into Belgium.
The decisive moment in the Battle of the Bulge and the failed German counteroffensive was when they literally ran out of gasoline.
Yeah.
Abandoned their tanks and started retreating back to Germany.
Yeah. That was the Battle of the Bulge was something else. Hitler's last gasp effort.
How fulfilling was it for you personally to write this book?
Oh gosh. It's been pretty amazing. When I first started out, I thought, well, I was going to write a book about my dad, but then I quickly realized it was about each member of the crew and furthermore about all those brave Belgium people that risked their lives. But it's really a tribute as well to the 306 Bomb Group and the entire 8th Air Force. They truly were the greatest generation. There's no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. And it's our duty to remember and never forget the sacrifice of those brave young men.
There's a photograph in you here of you on the dust jacket, and you're wearing what looks like a flight suit with a patch on it.
Yeah, that's a bomber jacket, an A2 jacket, or a replica, actually. Although the name tag on the jacket was my dad's original one, and the shoulder patches are original patches.
And that patch is the 8th Air Force? Did we lose Steve at the last moment? I think we got a disconnect. All right, the book is called Shot Down, the True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. You can get it at Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We've got Colorado's Afternoon News coming up next.